Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. This is School Sucks Across America, Day 17. I'm driving while I'm recording this monologue. I hope you don't mind. Man, what a surreal day in western Kansas. Still on the road, doing the longest drive of the trip so far between Wichita and Denver. And man, you know, it snowed. I didn't think I was going to see snow. I saw windmills, like an entire wind farm that was like 30 miles long. I mean, have you ever even been to America? It's great. It is just amazing country out here, folks. The sun is shining now. There's exquisite farmlands all around me. You can see so far in every direction. You really get a sense of how flat the earth is from these parts. I feel like I should be able to see the Rocky Mountains, considering, but I do also understand the limitations of the human eye. I am currently going 91 or 2 miles per hour, and it ain't no thing out here. You know, you go by a cop, and he just gives you a little tip of the hat and says, oh, well, good luck getting where you're going, partner. I mean, I feel like that's what would happen. I haven't even, oh my God, fucking tumbleweeds. Tumbleweeds! Anyway, I bet those would scratch my car. I've only ever seen one in a movie, usually like right before a gunfight. Yeah, 91, 92 miles an hour, no problem. And to top it all off, I've been listening to Gloria Estefan. And on a day like this, adding a little Gloria Estefan, folks, that's just like taking ecstasy. So even though this is day 17, we're going all the way back to day 9 here, when I was in Columbus, Ohio. And a wonderful young woman, a delightful young woman, named Gabby Maylock came out to the Columbus meetup. She came a good distance, her and her friend Noah. I think they were like an hour and a half away. It was really important for her to attend and to have a chat with me. So I was very honored to do it. Gabby is a new listener and a graduate student. She's getting a master's degree in critical studies in education. I mean, come on, right? So I wanted to be able to provide Gabby some support, an open ear. I know it's a real challenge to be a libertarian immersed in such a progressive environment in higher education. You know, she's been active participant in Students for Liberty and Young Americans for Liberty. And her friend Noah, who accompanied her to Columbus, he introduced her to the show about 8 months ago. So I was really excited that we could meet up. My only regret is we didn't have more time to get into more detail. We were trying to fit this in right before the Columbus meetup started. So as people started to show up, I had to cut it a little bit short. That was unfortunate. But, you know, I hope that in the future we can provide, you know, support and wisdom to people in Gabby's situation and to Gabby. I think you'll hear her on the show more in the future because I definitely want updates as her graduate studies continue. I think she actually sent me a couple. I haven't had a chance to look at them yet, but I got a couple messages from her after the Columbus meetup. It's hard to believe that was only 8 days ago, but it's hard to believe that was already 8 days ago. Time is messing with me a little bit out here on the high plains. But folks, I mean, this is, check out the drive journal from today. I am just ecstatic. This is beautiful country. Actually on my way to, I'm not sure where. I'm not going to make it all the way to Denver tonight. Taking a personal day. I'm going to go into a hotel and do something weird. I mean, why not? I think I've earned it. So that's about it. I hope you enjoy this conversation. There's more content coming from Columbus. I had an amazing night last night with Jared and Shauna Hine in the Wichita area. I got to their house. There was a meetup already in progress of unschool families, maybe about 20 people total. I did a roundtable with 8 or 9 youngsters who are all self-educators. I talked to the director of an alternative learning center called Sparks. Her name was Julie Price. You're going to hear all this on the podcast eventually, but I hope this, like, two shows a week. I hope that's working out for you. I had this idea that I wasn't going to edit anything, but, you know, who am I kidding? I at least have to listen to them, and then, you know, as I'm listening, I see room for improvement, so I make those improvements. And I know you guys got plenty of other stuff to listen to, so let's just try to stick to two or three a week until we wrap up School Sucks Across America. I think we've got 24 days left. And boy, I'm just so excited to see what's next. This has been an absolutely amazing journey. So you will get more content from Columbus as I make my way through Kansas, Colorado, Utah, and Nevada this week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and take care.
Want to just get started here?
Sure.
So your name is Gabby Mailer.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to, what is the name of the school?
Ohio University.
And you're a graduate student.
Correct.
And you were brought to this School Sucks pre-meetup in Columbus, Ohio by Noah.
Mm-hmm.
You want to use just your first name?
Or I don't care.
What's your whole name?
Noah Preuss.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that I got before we started recording
is
that
this'll be good.
You are a School Sucks listener.
Okay, yeah.
And you introduced Gabby to the show.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been listening now, Gabby?
Maybe like 8 months or
really?
So. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm new, I would say.
And you seem like excited, like you like the show.
Oh, yeah. Like this is my... Anytime I need a pick-me-up, I look up the website, and this is what I do in my
Get
free
out
time.
Of town.
Yeah.
That's a big endorsement.
Wow.
Yeah.
So why do you feel, like, what were the experiences, the questions that I wanted to ask everybody, and I'll ask both of you guys, you know, what experiences did you have, or are you having, because you're a graduate student, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you studying?
Critical studies in education.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a handful.
Are you a graduate student too?
No, not at all. I was in college at this point, I want to say over 6 years ago. I didn't finish. I got a job offer. I'm a solar installer most of the time.
So what? So you dropped out for the job?
Yeah.
So I guess the question is the School Sucks story. What was the experience that you had or the collection of experiences that you had? We'll start with you, Gabby, that made this message connect with you.
There's a lot of stories. I think I struggled most of school. I socially just felt like I never fit in. It's the hidden curriculum that always bothered me. You know, you'll get an A if you act like this or care about these topics, like all that. It was very socially, like I just didn't like.
Like right from the beginning.
Yeah, I have a story from kindergarten even.
No one has a story from kindergarten.
Yeah.
We're just playing with rubber bands and stuff. What happened in kindergarten?
So it might be a little inappropriate, but...
wait till you hear the most recent episode that I just put out today. We're over any line.
Okay.
So go for it.
Okay, really? So, you know, kindergarten, I had a best friend. He was a guy kid. Our parents knew each other. He was actually born the day after me, so we were like hospital babies together.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew each other very well, and it was our norm to, like, you know, just kiss, like, and so You know, as kids do, like, that's what my parents taught me. We all kissed each other in the family, and we did that with people we were close to. So in kindergarten, I remember him and I consensually would be like, hey, during recess, let's go behind the shed and kiss.
Yeah.
He's like, that's what we did. And we got caught, like, a couple times. And after that, I was like, wow, like, I'm really not allowed to show affection towards people I care about in a school setting. And we were very sneaky about it. Like, we made sure nobody else saw us. Mm-hmm. Of course, the teacher saw us, but yeah.
The other kids probably would have been too young to pick on you at that point. But that's an interesting thing. I never thought about the socialization of school. Mm-hmm. Like, so I was saying to you guys before we started recording, I was with my friend Andrew yesterday in Pittsburgh, and he and I have shared school stories. And he said that the environment was such when he was growing up in Butler, Pennsylvania, that if your friends found out you liked a girl,
yeah,
and you were all walking together in the hall, when the girl approached, his friends would just shove him into her, right? So they would collide,
uh-huh,
you know, in the hallway. And there is no, obviously, because they're, I was never, like, super impressed with a lot of the adult interactions that I saw in school. It all seemed kind of like snarky and underhanded and passive aggressive. And I didn't even have those words then, but I just picked up like, people here don't really like each other. They're just sort of tolerating each other. But yeah, it just wasn't a good environment for love.
Yeah.
You know, or for love to grow, like for my poor friend Andrew. So let's trade for one of your stories, Noah.
Okay. So,
then we'll come back.
Okay. There's a couple things, but I was homeschooled up until third grade.
So oh, okay.
Around that time is when my parents got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I went into public school. You know, it was a culture shock.
Yeah.
It was pretty huge. I didn't fit in well. I never probably fit in well in public school in general. But around high school, I think, is when I started looking up things for myself. And you know, it starts out slowly through, you know, a kid hands you a book, and I think I got an underground education handed to me early on.
By another kid?
Wait. No. I got to think about that. That book, maybe, and then I'm blanking on the other one. But see, the problem is he didn't really know what it was.
You know? Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I probably didn't either at the point. You know, he likes something here, there, in there. And, you know, this kid was kind of like a pseudo-anarchist at the time.
Yeah, okay. Kids could be that, I guess,
right,
at that
right,
age. Because
totally.
I'm like, kids handing each other books? Very encouraging.
Anarchist cookbook from him, which is
absolutely,
you know, worthless book whatsoever. And so after that, I went off in a weird... You know, I got a little bit into the conspiracy orient, and I kind of identify with, you know, the path you took,
mm-hmm,
you know, through there. Early kind of Alex Jones, but I hate to say
and
that.
And how old, no,
I
no.
I hate to say that at this point.
Oh, it's great it to say. Memory lane, man.
Right. So,
well, how old are you when all this is happening?
So, I want to say 17 to, like, 20-some, maybe.
Okay.
And probably, like... The end of that is like when I found like Free Talk or something like that.
Okay.
And you know, I was like growing out of that. I was like, things aren't quite making sense.
The conspiracy stuff was, and those guys would always shit on it anyway. So,
oh yeah.
Can I know your ages? How old are you? Mm-hmm. 26?
Yes, 26.
And you're 24?
23.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Close.
Yeah. That's I'm all right at guessing ages, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
We're talking like. I'm just trying to, like, place it in time. So for you, a lot of this is happening around 2010, 2011.
Right. Well, a little prior. So last years of Obama.
Last years of, okay.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is being fed into your head,
mm-hmm,
and you're going to school.
Yeah.
So this is just, like, putting a new kind of tint on the whole school experience.
It
right?
is. You know, being very unhappy with the... you know, I liked history, but it was just a very dry, very minimal, whitewashed version of history. And I saw that right away. And that's probably why I started, you know, going for the conspiracy-oriented kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. Oh, and you're ready for fun. You need fun after that history.
It's automatically interesting. And part of it is, again, I know something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys aren't getting the full story. I know what's really going on here.
Right. So for you, it was kind of like you have this one thing at the beginning where you have this culture shock of entering the school after being home educated. And then another thing at the end where you're bored by what's being taught. So you start, you know.
Right. And so my parents, or maybe more specifically my mom, you know, anti-George Bush Democrats kind of stuff.
Sure.
So I saw Loose Change at the public library.
Yes, this is so, what happens. Yeah. Okay.
So
Gabby, you are affiliated with Students for Liberty, right?
Yes.
And what do you do? You're a president?
I'm the campus coordinator.
Okay.
On my campus.
And how many members do you have there?
We have members come and go. We have, I would say, at least a solid 8 who show up on the weekly meetings, but our email list is probably over like 20 or 25.
Okay. So if you're devoting your time to an organization like Students for Liberty, the training of public school also did not work for you, we know, like beyond kindergarten. When would you say you became liberty-minded or a libertarian?
Yeah, I would say it's similar to Noah's. It was high school around the end of the Obama administration, probably when Ron Paul was getting some momentum. I was very socially, I didn't feel like I belonged in 11th and 12th grade. So I was finding things on the internet, something that I could connect with, and it was all libertarian stuff. I'm like, oh, this is what I am. This is what I want. This is the type of society I want. And so when I came to college, I joined Young Americans for Liberty, and I'm still involved with Young Americans for Liberty. I'm actually the vice president at the Ohio University campus.
We're talking like Ron Paul the second time around, like 2012?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. When did you get involved?
I started taking action probably actually before I got involved with Young Americans for Liberty, and it might have been in a very subtle way.
Were you in college or high school?
In college.
Okay.
In high school, it was I knew I'm liberty-minded and all that in high school, but I couldn't talk about those ideas with peers because I knew they wouldn't get that. So college, I started just campaigning for Gary Johnson. I remember decorating my residence hall door with all memes of Gary Johnson and stuff like that. Anytime anyone would walk by, I'd be like, hey, vote for Gary Johnson. So that's maybe where it started. And then I got involved with Young Americans for Liberty.
When did you realize that, like, I mean, you get to college. When did you realize that? And you already have these ideas, but when did you realize public school really hadn't prepared you for maybe a lot of the things that you encountered? And it had also maybe steered you in the wrong direction as far as, you know, the development of your own ideas and ambitions were concerned.
Honestly, I think that's something that slowly developed throughout my whole public school education, because I always knew something was quite off, and like Noah had said, I wasn't getting the full picture. And I think it might have even taken until recently to really acknowledge that. I know, like my mom's from Polish, so I come from a different like ethnic identity a little bit, and I always felt like my culture wasn't welcomed in the public school setting. Like I had to forget about being Polish for a long time.
Why was that? That's interesting.
Just there was no other Polish people in the area, so you just don't talk about it.
Ah, okay.
And then it becomes I shouldn't be Polish. Like, that's something I shouldn't embrace in my identity. So
it's a melting pot.
Yeah.
We like to think of it as a melting pot.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
So when I want to kind of change directions here and ask when you guys felt like you were really taking your education into your own hands. It's interesting because you both went to college and I think it's fair to say from the stories that you've told that your ideas were still forming, right? Like you're campaigning. I would say if you're campaigning for Gary Johnson, your ideas are still forming. That's fair, right?
True that.
And you just, I think you get the sense that something isn't right or something is amiss. It's what you were describing, Noah. But there's really, it takes a while to figure out how to direct that and how to focus that. And obviously, you know, unless you're online and getting connected, you really don't get a chance to even interact with other people intellectually until you get to college. So that's probably another kind of wake-up call. Maybe you could speak to that, Noah.
Well, about college or...
Just how, you know, you take these ideas to college and what happens.
Right. So definitely around the time of college, I wouldn't say... I've always found it pretty hard to be, you know, out, you know, out libertarian, if we want to put it. I think I met the first other libertarian in college, and it was in a very basic either world history or world politics kind of course, and he was like a Reaganite libertarian kind of thing, where I would... You know, like, even at that point, I was like, we're kind of the same thing, but not really.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that term Reaganite libertarian was just created 10 seconds ago by you. But I get what you mean.
It's oxymoronic, but he used it.
So, all right, but we're talking during the Obama years, right?
So I misspoke. So, yeah. So early Obama years, you know, late Bush years is when, you know, I first kind of started having half a political thought, but
right. But I got you. A lot of conservative people started to talk more like libertarians as soon as Obama took office. Right. Yep.
So my experience, you know, I'd sneak in maybe an original thought here and there, but I was very much aware that I could play to the heavy liberal bias of my professors. And so, you know,
What were you studying?
So I was going for, you know, what was vaguely a renewable energy studies degree.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was a degree that was half-assed put together
and very politically motivated.
I would imagine. Yeah. And it was more that, you know, I kind of felt like that's what I would do. You know, it wasn't something that I was super passionate about, but, you know, you go into renewable energy. It's the way of the future.
Right.
Right. You know, a couple of the papers I remember writing was about private military contractors, only because I knew that that professor felt super strong about it. And it was just a garbage paper. You know, I turned in a couple of them because I knew I could get away with it. Finished, you know, the morning of and turned them in. And I got like a super good grade just because, you know, I was playing to her bias.
You're on the right side, right? So, you're on the right side of their argument.
I'm on the right, yeah, but anything's to the right side of their argument.
No, but you're on the, not right, correct side.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You're on the side they want you to be on, right?
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Like, I don't remember dealing with this a lot in college. Like, it was one or two professors.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I was just crazy liberal anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. But so many people tell me these stories, like your ideas can hurt your grades.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it speaks to the bubble, right? Like there is no, when we hear things like the debate is over, there is no debate there. It's a mystery to a lot of these people why everybody doesn't think like they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to be remediated
in
the public. It's a problem. So.
I mean, even at that, this is like 2012 or something like that, 2011, 2012. Even then feels a lot more open than it is now. So it was like SB5, which was the teachers union law. That was like something that, you know, even if you felt something against that, you know, if you mentioned that to one of your professors, I'm pretty sure that they would, you know, find a way to half dock you for that.
Right.
And it was very much, that was, very much a class that it was a creative writing type class that tried to push you in a way where you develop your, you know, political opinions.
I'm sure. Absolutely. And now you, what did you study undergraduate?
Communication.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Probably different than the way I studied it. What did you want to do?
I originally was studying business, so I have a minor in business marketing because I wanted to do marketing, advertising. So a lot of my communication work was trying to advertising and design, stuff like that.
Okay. So you have that degree in education. Now you're doing your master's?
Mm-hmm.
In what was it called?
Critical studies in education.
Now, what does that all mean?
Yeah, it means a lot of different things. It has to do with like critical thinking, critical theory, critical pedagogy, really looking at education from a difference lens.
Hold on one sec.
What could possibly be in there?
Icebreaker. Is it? I don't know.
There.
I don't know. That's what it sounds like. I could be wrong.
I totally agree with you. That is what it sounds like. But what's it doing in that creepy ass closet? All right. I'm sorry. I think we're okay.
You're fine. The degree I'm studying now in my coursework relates to like looking at education through a difference lens.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people or classmates are for the public school system, mm-hmm. but we've looked at alternative education and just trying to change education, transform it.
Transform it to what?
They want to transform it into a way that is more progressive, I guess, is the language they'll like to use. Then challenges, like Noah brought up, the whitewashness of history.
Yeah.
Which I think is fair. Like, we need to look at education through a multi-perspective lens. Like, there needs to be
more. Oh, I didn't even use it in that way.
But that, at least yeah. this is what my education is teaching me, that we do need to look at things through multiple perspectives. But that's what I like about unschooling is that the child or the adults can actually explore these perspectives on their own. They're not forced, like the public school system forces you to learn these different things. And no matter, I think no matter what we try to do, it's still not going to be as holistic as the way the real world works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any like consistent ideas or sort of like overarching ideas about education that have been pushed? Like they keep coming back to. You said progressive. So to me, like when I was in graduate school, it was constructivist. So constructivist was sort of bottom up. And then there was also like the traditional top down approach. So mm-hmm. of course, in this idealistic phase, everybody is a constructivist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that translates to a more progressive. The biggest connection is that it kind of takes merit or achievement out of the picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, I mean, that was 20 years ago. So what are some of the patterns that you see now?
It's definitely, we have to put money into the public school system. We
it's
have
money.
To
yeah.
Equally distribute that wealth. That's a common theme. And I try to critique that too. Like putting money into the system doesn't really fix things.
No. Is there debate? Is there like heated, like you talk about trying to, you know, bring some of the ideas about spending, right? And
yeah.
You're vocal about this.
Mm-hmm.
Are these things debated? Do people roll their eyes at you?
I actually don't even bring this up because I don't feel, I'm like, it's one against like 12 other people most of the time and stuff like that. I
but
can't even
armed.
Challenge.
You're armed.
Yeah.
You know, they're just repeating stuff. You
right.
know what to do.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Have you, so are you, my next question for you is going to be, have you ever tried to insert some of the things you've heard maybe, I don't know, my show, into discussions in this program?
Yeah, I have. And I think the conversations are so heated that I don't even remember them
uh-huh.
because I'm just like, wow, that was too much emotional stuff right there for me and them that I just don't remember.
Well, like a couple times she's told me that she's yeah. been verbally shut down by both professors and students or just
mm-hmm.
students.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying. Like, I can give you an example.
That's what I
specifically
ask, yeah.
wasn't there in class because I knew this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But my friend told me about it. And it was related to the Las Vegas shooting. Every week in class, we talk about like current events that are going on in the world.
Right.
So the gun, limiting gun use mm-hmm. was a topic that came up. And pretty much everyone in the class besides my one friend was like, we need to regulate guns more. We need more gun control. And my one friend was like, well, maybe we should be looking at this as more of a mental health issue or just trying to bring a different perspective. It doesn't matter if I agree with the SSA or not, but he was trying to bring in a different perspective and challenge this whole issue, and he was completely shut down. And I didn't go to class because I knew we were going to talk about this, and I knew that my opinion was not of the majority.
My audience will write me nasty letters if I don't ask you.
Yes.
What was the most uncomfortable experience that you had trying to bring, you know, free market ideas of edu- or just libertarian political ideas into one of these discussions? Let's go through
that. Oh, gosh.
I really want to believe. I'm not trying to do confirmation bias here. Mm-hmm. It's just, but everybody helps me do it if I want to.
Yeah. Right. No, and I complain to Noah so many times about how frustrated and lost I feel and, like, alone in my classes. I'm trying to think of a specific example. It just happens so often that I'm at the point where I just let it go. I don't know. Oh, it's charter schools.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is kind of our big issue, is either private education or, you know, that's what you'd hope to do afterwards.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were talking about charter schools because it's a form of alternative education. And again, I was just saying, like, we should consider the pro school choice argument. Like, there is rationale behind school choice. Like, whether it's, like, a child should have, and a parent should have a right to choose between, should we send our school to public school, private school, homeschool? They should have all these choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to bring that to everyone's attention, that, but they have this bias of, oh, this is a Republican thing.
It's the idea that the money should follow the child, right? Mm-hmm. So if people are paying into property taxes, then they should, I mean, even if we're talking about vouchers, and like I used to be, I was talking about this recently with somebody, but I was such a purist like 5 or 6 years ago. I was like, no, we're not going to, because then the unions will just take that over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I'm still not super warm on the idea compared to a home education or putting a young person in charge of their own learning as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand that, like, the charters are at the very least, you know, the dressing on a wound for a lot of communities in this country, where the kinds of visions that I have for what education should be, they're just not possible for some families.
Mm-hmm.
So if this experiment can be conducted and results can be gathered, I'm all for it, you know? And if it involves vouchers at this point, fine.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be really harsh, not like totally opposed, but I was very, very skeptical of that idea. So, and Noah, you were saying that, you were saying that this is what you want to move into after, right? This is why you're getting this degree.
Yeah. Like, well, I want to do alternative education of some sort, and that's why I'm getting the degree.
Okay. So charter schools, according to your community there in this graduate program, are just kind of a tool of evil Republicans, or what's the argument? Like, let's steel man their argument. Like, what's the best argument they could make against your position? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I would say it's not even my position. I just am an advocate for bringing in a different perspective.
It's a step, right? Sure.
Yeah. Like, it's a step. Yeah. I think there is some rationale behind it. They're very worried about the poor, low-income schools in those communities.
Right.
And I don't know the exact language that they use, but they think that charter schools take away the money from those communities and those schools.
Okay, so all the money for the public school to improve, all of the tax money that school is due, finger quotes, needs to go to that school because the school is already struggling, probably because it's already underfunded because there's a lack of, you know, property taxes or revenue in that district.
Mm-hmm.
So now this is almost like a kind of parasite on the public system in the form of private education, right?
Yeah.
And I'll even go a step further with their argument. Charter schools right now can be anything. And, you know, when people see government money just sloshing around into new places, they say, well, I'm going to go to that new place with a bucket and see what happens. You know, I mean, that happens in a lot of different industries.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of, you know, fly-by-night kind of charter school operations that are giving the whole enterprise a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they do have an argument, I think, or they do have a rationale for concern, and that's tough. I think it's hard in those kinds of discussions or, you know, debates to separate the emotion, right? Because there's sort of like this collection or it's made about personality or identity. This is a Republican thing, right? And Republicans are evil, so this is an evil thing.
right? Mm-hmm. Hi, new people. Hold on, let me just pause for a second, and I'll say hi to these guys, and then we'll keep going. No service people have come down here, but I didn't ask them to, and we just got here, and I said I'm just down there to set up. We're starting at 7. Okay, cool. So it's 12 minutes, and we're just going to wrap up this interview in the meantime. So yeah, we're making a stronger argument. We're making a stronger case against charter schools to help our progressive friends.
Mm-hmm.
Where did I leave off? Charter schools, fly by night, sucking money away from public schools. And then because it's something that Republicans are pushing for, and Betsy DeVos, for goodness sake, is pushing for, it's very easy to turn it into the good and evil kind of discussion.
It's pretty much a stonewall for most of their psyche.
So I think the path would be to be like, yeah, you know, Republicans are shit. You know, they have so many bad ideas, and they're doing so many things wrong. I'm coming at this from another angle. You know, I'm just trying to create options. And obviously, you know, there's, I think the best, like, you know, foundation to put down is as many examples in education that you can find that more money doesn't solve problems.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know if that's something that's been debated, where you had to build an argument with examples that money doesn't solve problems. Because I'm thinking like that's what is assumed, that money does solve problems. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys don't really have formal debates. It's just sort of these emotional class discussions.
Yeah. I guess some people could call it a debate. It's definitely more emotional based, which I do value in a sense, but I also think you have to look at the practicality of things. I do like how we're looking at things from a different perspective, and we're trying to challenge what's being taught in education.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I see right through it, and that it's really their way or the highway. It's, again, the hidden curriculum. If you don't agree with this, you don't fully belong in it.
So it's kind of like going through the motions. Like what the best course is already decided probably in all of these social sciences fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like, you know, there's tracks that you follow to the end of that degree, right?
Yeah.
So we're about to start a meetup in 10 minutes or so. And in the final segment here, this is just really for my entertainment and enlightenment. Do you guys have any questions for me?
I was just thinking about this. What has been the most eye-opening experience for you, just relating to education and where you are today?
It would, you know, it's tough because it's the choice between these two different types of work that I did early in my career. Teaching inner city kids in a boarding school, or just, you know, rural, white, poor kids all mixed together, or working with and underachievers, learning disabilities, emotional problems, like everything against them. And then on the other side, going to the Boston suburbs and tutoring the wealthy overachievers who are, you know, trying to get into whatever college the next door neighbor with a kid the same age is trying to get into to stay competitive. I saw so many of the same patterns, I think, in both places. But it was really, and I'm not sure why, just off, you know, the top of my head, I'm not sure why, but the second experience was much more formative for me in getting me to where I am now. I mean, I don't want to discount the 15,000 hours I spent as a student. You know, that obviously really, and I've been accused of that, like in comments, places like, this guy probably didn't do well in school, and he's probably mad at school. Well, sure, yeah, I am, you know, but there other stuff happened after that. So I think, you know, I was going from district to district. I worked with hundreds of kids in like a period of 2 or 3 years. So I saw a lot of stuff, but I was actually, for the first time since I student taught in 2002 in a public school, between 2006 and 2009, I was in public schools all the time. I was talking with teachers. I was talking with administrators.
And I was talking to guidance counselors. And I was like, nobody here gives a shit about anything. Mm-hmm. And sitting through meetings and having to, like making a connection with a kid. Like these meetings are all just like for show and like accommodations and modifications and nothing changes. It's, you know, it's all going to be generally the same stuff. And the real problems are never addressed by the school. Or so many of the real problems. I'm not saying that there aren't interventions that don't help some kids. Of course there are. But I would be working with kids and trying to connect with them, right? Because they'd be like, you're just another stupid adult who doesn't understand me. Like that's the archetype that I was sort of fitting into, because that's what their teachers were. That's what their parents were in context of the school, right? Like, mom is the school's police. Mm-hmm. Mom gets you out of bed in the morning. Mom and dad make sure you did your homework. They argue with you if you didn't. They scold you if your report card's not good enough. So when a tutor shows up, it's just like, this isn't even a necessary person. Mm-hmm. Like the teachers, I get it. The principals, I get it. This is like too many men on the field at this point. Mm-hmm. So like I was met with a lot of antagonistic or at the very least like disinterested kinds of attitudes with kids, and I had to win them over. Mm-hmm. And when we would have moments like, oh, I'm excited about this. Oh, I get it. Oh, I like learning. You know, I see. I was always like, oh, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're way off track. We have to go back. I'd be like telling a story about some history thing or something. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sorry. That's not even in your book. My apologies. So it was that. It was like when I actually saw people like light up like that, it was because I was doing something I wasn't supposed to, you know, as far as the school or the teacher was concerned. Mm-hmm. So, and I think like I was kind of in a closed off world in that boarding school. It was like where I woke up when I saw what happens to kids in state custody, you know. So I saw, you know, all of this disregard for these kids and all of this drug use. But then it was when... Or the being prescribed drugs, I mean, you know, and the effects that would have. So that was when I was like, things okay, but when things aren't okay. But when we went to this other experience and I saw all these different things, that was when I really like started journaling. I started recording. I would sit at home in my office and just talk into GarageBand. I didn't, like you guys are describing, I didn't have a map, right?
Yeah.
And I was like 25, 26. I didn't have a map, but I knew something was wrong. And I was just starting to collect things that were wrong into a things that are wrong with school collage.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that experience that motivated me to do that. So there you go. Yeah. There's an answer to that question.
Yeah, thank you.
Know anything?
I didn't even know I was going to be on here. So
no, that's fine. You could also ask me about Puke in the Gang. You said you listened to that. If you have any questions about that,
I probably would have had a good one. But no, I'm pretty much good. I'd like to thank you for, you know, if it was a beeline out this direction on your way out, but
Columbus was on the map from the beginning because of my friend Drew. I was excited. I was excited to get out here. And I appreciate you guys making the drive, too. I know it was a long way.
Thank you.
And you probably have more stories you could share in the future.
Oh, I have so many.
She does. She's just slightly nervous. Get her going.
Yeah? Oh, well, maybe that'll happen tonight. And we'll record again. And if you want to get back on this mic and talk more, that would be my pleasure.
Okay.
So thank you so much for coming on the show. And I look forward to updates on your educational career. That's very cool.
Thank you.